Bartlett, soccer show, John Hayes, Danny Brams. It's a Friday morning. The 2025 Charlotte FC season is underway. It's great to see you early in the morning, Danny. And this season, I've got to say, it feels like it's starting out with quite a bang here. And it's and not just because of transfer news, and there's big transfer news, and we're going to get into that as well. But so many things happening in and around the club right now. Dean Smith, his opening press conference happened this week. Other press conferences as well. Captain Ashley Westwood. It's happening, Danny. It's here. But you know who's not here? Patrick Adjumong. Patrick Adjumong is with the United States men's national team. I want to lead with that today, Danny, despite a big-time verbal agreement between Charlotte FC and Wilfried Zaha, the former Crystal Palace player, now Galatasaray. We're going to get into that. It's not official yet. We're going to get into that. It's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. We heard the confirmations on Thursday. But I just need to get your take quickly because we've been doing this show since Charlotte FC's inaugural season. We have followed Patrick Adjumong since he's joined MLS from the University of Rhode Island. And now he's with the United States men's national team training under Mauricio Pochettino. Danny, that development to me is absolutely insane. Can you put it into perspective for us?
What took him so long? That's the only question I have, Johnny. Great to see you. First show of 2025. Cheers up. Love
Cheers
a coffee cast.
I see that little mug
minty
there.
Mug. Yeah, I got my minty mug here. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening, just picture me drinking from a minty mug if you're listening on audio only. Delicious home-brewed coffee, loving life. It's great to be here. Great to see you. Great to be back with the TiVos. Great to be back for another go-round. Season 4, if you can believe it, of Charlotte FC and of this Charlotte Soccer Show. Charlotte is a soccer city, as we like to say. We've been known to say. To answer your question, Johnny, Patrick Adjumong, what took him so long? We've been saying from the very beginning that since this guy came to the club, like, how did he slip through the cracks? Why has he not been on the U.S. men's national radar since he was 15? And he's finally on the radar and in the camp and doing big things. Charlotte FC has opened their preseason camp, but Patrick's not here yet. And there's a very good chance Patrick could be prepping to play in some friendlies coming up. They've not got a lot of strikers. Jesus Ferreira is probably the most experienced striker in the camp. Maybe you could say Jesus Ferreira and Brian White were the most experienced strikers in the camp. And Ferreira's gone. Ferreira left the camp. So really it's just Brian White and Patrick Adjumong are two of the, I think, six forwards left for some upcoming friendlies. I would expect Patrick Adjumong to have his U.S. men's national debut here in the next set of friendlies that the U.S. is playing. A cap, if you will. We doff our cap for a cap. I think it's coming. He may not start, but I think he's going to see the field. And it's just exciting to see. You know, there was a lot of buzz when we brought Tim Ream in, and a lot of people saying, I can't believe there's someone, a Charlotte FC player, is a U.S. men's national player. Like, that's something we didn't know if we were going to see so brief, so, you know, early in the club's lifetime. And now we got two. And one of them is a striker. And Tim Ream is a valuable contributor on the men's national team. But you know, he's a defender, you know, and defenders are great. Everybody loves defense. You know, I know you love a good stuck in tackle, Johnny, especially, but there's just something about a striker. And to think that someone who's for the crown could be the guy banging in goals for the red, white, and blue is just absolutely a stunning development.
And Tim Ream's on the opposite end of his career than right. Patrick Adjumong as well. Tim Ream is essentially passing the torch to Patrick Adjumong on the United States men's national team. Patrick is 24 right now. So he's got some time. If over the next year and a half, Patrick plays really well, maybe he could find himself as a reserve on the World Cup roster. I'm not going to rule that out. And the reason why is because I have on this show years ago said that Patrick Adjumong is a United States men's national team prospect. And now he's with the camp. And from a timing point of view, we know Karol Swiderski is not coming back, Danny, to Charlotte FC.
Well, we think he's not. Now, no is a strong word there when you're dealing with Zoran Crneta, but he has indicated that he would be surprised if we start the season with Karol. But then he was also saying, he told us, last year he'd be surprised if Carroll came back on loan from Verona, and lo and behold, surprise, surprise, he did come back. So Zoran has been known to say one thing and then be surprised later. So as of now, Carroll is a Charlotte FC player, but the word on the street is he's being heavily shopped. And the other word on the street that Zoran told us is that he thinks one of the reasons Carroll's so keen to get a move on and move out is because he doesn't want to end up on the bench behind Aujmong and with nowhere to get on the field.
Exactly. And I just think it's busy up front right now, especially with this agreement with new DP Wilfried Zaha. And you've got Liel Abada on that front line as well. And as Kyle Szymański offers depth, there's no doubt about that. And so does Patrick. I mean, I think, is Charlotte FC a better team with all of those players involved? Yes, but the Kyle Szymański experiment at this point can't continue to go on like it has. And I think that what we're seeing in reading the tea leaves is that Charlotte FC is just willing to offload this guy at a loss, just like they did with Enzo Capetti.
Yeah, with the numbers we've heard tossed around are $3 million price tag. Don't know exactly how accurate that is, but that would be a lot less than we paid for him initially when we brought him in as the club's first ever DP. And you know, don't get it twisted. Carroll scored what should have been a match-winning goal in an elimination game, game 3 of 3 in the first round of the MLS playoffs last year. Carroll's a guy that has scored some big goals for this club. He's instrumental in some monumental moments. The comeback against Chicago when he's almost single-handedly, you know, brought us back and won a game for us a couple of years ago. And he scored some big goals and he does this, you know, and then Carroll's very much a guy who's in the fabric and in the identity of this club. It's weird to be talking about him as someone that we feel like we can just let go as fans here, but Patrick Aujmong is the future. And Carroll is a guy who, you know, so one day he wants to be here, one day he doesn't. You never quite know what you're going to get with Carroll. And I think he's been a good soldier. And I think if you know, surprise, surprise, he does end up starting the season in camp and doesn't get sold off before the season. You know, there's about 2 weeks left in the transfer window here to ship him out. If we are going to try to get him to Europe for some European team to bring him in as a reinforcement for the end of their season. He's been a guy that I think will have to be remembered fondly. I don't think you can say that Carroll was a bad Charlotte FC player. I think he's, at one point I called him my favorite player. He has scored some of my favorite goals. He's done some things that are absolutely amazing, but I'm ready to throw my lot in with Pat and make it all happen with Aujmong for sure. That's not even a question. And I think, you know, like, in the end, where do you stand with Carroll, John?
Well, it's an exciting time, and the reason why is because it's in with the new and out with the old, and it's at some point you just have to make that decision, and it's a decision that's been lingering for this club, and this has been an off-season of change. There's been a lot of connectivity between Charlotte FC's inaugural season, its launch, the 10-person committee that was with TSE that made this team happen. Remember, the startup within the organization. That's what Charlotte FC was. It was a startup within Tepper Sports and Entertainment.
And the other football team, yeah.
The other football team, exactly right. And there was a lot of connectivity from that conception to the end-of-season gut-wrenching loss at Orlando, which featured a huge goal from Kyle Szymański, one of the biggest goals of the season.
Right.
And that connectivity was there. But
who started that? Aujmong started that match and scored a goal in the first half that was wrongly ruled offside.
True.
And so that is that sort of bridge to the future that you're talking about.
Right. But my point is that you get into the offseason and that's when the reset button was hit. Mm-hmm. When Orlando scored in added time, and all of a sudden beat Charlotte in PKs. What ends up happening is everybody's heart and soul was absolutely crushed to the point. And I think this is a really important thing to note: is that in Dean Smith's opening answer in his preseason press conference, he talked about being bitter about the loss against Orlando still and using that as fuel in 2025. That's the only thing that is connecting to what Charlotte FC was in the past. Because now that you're signing Wilfred Zaha, now that you have Liel Abada, you're talking about a former Crystal Palace player, probably on the left-hand wing, replacing Kerwin Vargas. Vargas is a nice depth. Kerwin Vargas. Vargas is a nice depth piece there, Danny. But this is next level. This is a new direction for the franchise, signing somebody like Zaha in that position. And then also a young player from Celtic who has his entire career in front of him still, and Liel Abada on the right, and now a United States men's national team striker there in the center of the pitch. This is, and then Eric Williamson, a new signing as well from Portland Timbers, who's had a really nice career in MLS, someone that's going to make this midfield better, someone who, in my opinion, I think is going to make an impact like Brant Bronico does. I think Brant Bronico is your classic MLS midfielder. I think Eric Williamson is that as well. I think that's a really good thing for this squad. You add Tim Ream to the mix at the end of his career playing in MLS. I think something that he can do. This is the new era of Charlotte FC. The launch, the first season, second season, third season, to me at this point, is officially dead and buried. It's on with the new. And it feels like this club, for once, is trying to win an MLS Cup.
Yeah, and if we do officially end up saying goodbye to Karol Swiderski, that is sort of that final chapter. That's like slamming the book shut for sure. I mean, the first ever DP moving out for good would be kind of a punctuation, an exclamation point on that whole situation. And you mentioned the name Zaha. We're going to get into that. Zaha.
Let's get into it now.
It's not got the official notice from the club. However, it's got the "here we go" tweet from Fab Romano. Tom Bogert has reported, amongst others, that this is like on the verge of being official. There's even some reports that say Zaha is in Charlotte or on his way to Charlotte right now for that medical. Hopefully the ghost of Calvin Stengs is not looming over that medical. But assuming all goes well, Wilfred Zaha instantly becomes the classiest player to ever be for the crown. I mean, this is a guy who played at Manchester United as a young player, who shined for Crystal Palace for many years and dominated at times in the English Premier League. Ended up making kind of a money move, a strange move out to the Turkish league, and didn't really mesh well with what was going on in Turkey. He's been playing in the French league, was loaned to Olympic Lyonnais from Galatasaray in Turkey. So he's looking for a home. He's just looking for a home, Johnny. And now it's time for his American adventure, as they say, in his early 30s, Zaha coming in, a guy who's not really had a lot of injury. Like, yes, he's, you know, starting to hit sort of the end of his prime but he's not a guy who's ever been too bothered by injury. And I think he's just an amazing signing, a guy with just tons of skill. He's not a guy that relies on speed. He's got decent pace, but he's a guy that relies on skill and physicality. He's big. He's someone who really, when you talk about European stars and guys who can come make the jump across the pond and just start to dominate, even more so than we knew Liel Abada was class when he came here, and Abada has shown flashes. I think Dean Smith has been open about saying we need more from Abada, and Liel is now settled. He's got a full season. He gets to start preseason camp in Charlotte. He got married in the offseason. He's now 23 years old. Liel Abada is a youngster with a bright future and more development still to go. Wilfred Zaha is the finished product, and he's here to dominate from day one, we'd have to think. And so I think, like, what do we expect from Zaha? I mean, do you think he's a guy that's creating goals or scoring goals himself, or the whole thing?
I mean, you can think that he's coming here to dominate if you like. And I'm taking my mute button on and off here because I've got some dogs downstairs. So if you can hear them on the recording, it's because they're being dogs. They're
excited about Zaha, you know, just like all of us.
I specifically need to point out the fact that Zaha, you said he made the big money move to Galatasaray and it didn't work out there. So he was loaned to Lyon. And Lyon, who's in a team in League One in the French League, reports were that the reason why this loan is not going well is because Zaha showed up to Lyon not match ready, not match fit. And the club didn't appreciate that. And he's not featured since, I believe it is September. And I'm curious how match ready and how match fit he is right now, because when you kind of dive into, you know, who Zaha is as a player, he's 32 years old, and he is certainly on the back end of his career. Now, does that mean he have class? He doesn't have quality? Absolutely not. But when I see a report that a loan ends because a player was not fit enough to carry out his responsibility, I get a little concerned. I get a little concerned that this is another money move to MLS for a player that was really, really good in the Premier League years ago at this point. And yeah, when I think about Wilfried Zaha and I think about my memories for him playing for Crystal Palace, mm-hmm. alongside Christian Benteke, by the way, who's playing as striker for DC United, a player that maybe Zaha reached out to and talked to about MLS. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. But when I think back to when Zaha was really cooking for Crystal Palace, it was pre-2020. And that also concerns me as well, because that's now 6-7 years ago at this point when he was in his mid-20s. I am not saying that this is a bad signing. It's a loan deal, and it's another loan deal. It's a DP loan deal. That's what we're expecting to see. But all that I'm saying is I think the entire story needs to be discussed. I think there's going to be a lot of people that sit around and talk about Wilfried Zaha from Crystal Palace in 2018 and 2019. All I'm telling you is it's 2025. He's had issues with his last two clubs, and now he's going to give Charlotte FC a go. We'll see how that pans out. I hope it pans out closer to Crystal Palace than it does Lyon and Galatasaray.
Yeah, I mean, we do want the Crystal Palace Zaha. When he left Crystal Palace, he was the all-time – he had the most Premier League goals in Crystal Palace history when he left.
Yes.
70-some goals across 300 matches.
300 appearances. Thank you for bringing those stats to the table. Unbelievable. 300 appearances in the Premier League. Woo, you have to be special to make that happen, especially in an attacking position.
I think, you know, not to denigrate MLS or anything, I'm a champion for MLS at all times, but it's a different, you know, like someone with the class to do that in the Premier League, even if they are a little bit older, a little bit longer in the tooth, I have to think that they're coming here to show that class and show some of the, you know, the poorer defenders. The bottom of MLS can be pretty bad at times. And so if Zaha comes over here and is in the type of form that we know he can be in, if he's bought in attitudinally, if he's regretful of how things have gone to Lyon and how things panned out in Turkey, and he's motivated, I think we're getting a steal. I don't know exactly the money that'll be involved. You'd have to assume he's going to be up there with Diabata salary-wise as one of the highest paid players in the club. But I just think it's the right time, the right move. And you know, this is a player that, you know, this is the type of player that we can go get as Charlotte FC. You know, it's tougher to recruit, you know, the superstars, you know, that might want to go to Miami or LA or New York or things like that. A lot of people over in Europe, they don't know where Charlotte is. I mean, we know and we love it. And people come over here and fall in love. Look at what Ashley Westwood has done. You know, he's fallen in love with the city of Charlotte, and others have as well. But when you talk about Abada coming in, it was because of special circumstances. When you talk about Westwood coming in, guy with his class and his pedigree, it's because he's a little bit older. If Zaha works out and is bought in the way Ashley Westwood is bought in, I think it's going to lead to nothing but amazing things for the Crown.
Aside from the individual player, right? And we can discuss the individual player, and that's fine. We can talk about his accomplishments, and they are more than impressive. But from a squad point of view, right? I think this is actually where the signing should be lauded, right? Where Zorin should be, and Dean Smith specifically, should be kind of given their due. And the reason why is because if you looked at the squad, there was just like one glaring omission. mainly because Kyle Swiderski refuses to play on the wing, but he refuses to do a lot of things. Zaha is going to come in and he's going to play on the wing. He's going to potentially play in that number 10 role. He's not, I don't think he's going to be a player that comes in and demands to play striker. I think that in Dean Smith's system, Zaha will be, you know, whether he plays on the left wing or the right wing, for me, it depends. I think game by game, both Abada and Zaha could switch. Within the game, Abada and Zaha could switch. And there's a situation here where Zaha plays the 10 and Pep Biel, who's coming back on a loan from Olympiacos. And I always get Olympiacos confused with another club. That's why I say it that way. But Olympiacos, Pep Biel is here as well, right? So we're talking, like, this is crazy. I want you to think about this for a second, right? From a squad point of view, we're talking about Crystal Palace to Galatasaray to the United States men's national team to Celtic. Like, that's a pretty freaking good front line as far as historical clubs, clubs that you expect quality, and now all of a sudden Charlotte has that quality. From a squad point of view, this signing is exactly what the Crown needed. I am just not going to sit here and just assume that the signing is going to work out. That's all.
That's my job.
That is your job, Danny. I am hopeful that this signing works out. But what does it show? I think it shows something that's really important to you. It shows ambition, doesn't it?
Of course. You got to have ambition. And let's break it down in terms of what – because before this Zaha signing materialized, we first started hearing about this late December, that it was a possibility, and then it all really came together in the last few days as far as actually happening. And there was – it's almost like Charlotte FC was going down two paths. There was the Zaha path, and there was the Miguel Almiron path. Then there was all this talk – there's a lot more smoke and chatter about Almiron. Oh, we're getting Almiron. We're going to bring him back. We're going to screw Atlanta over and bring their former superstar back to MLS. His time at Newcastle has kind of started to wind down. And, Miggy's return is happening via Charlotte, and that's going to be great. And that started to sort of overshadow the Zaha rumors, even after they came out, right? As it's happened, it looks like we made our choice. I'm guessing that money was probably the major motivator. Miguel was demanding a big salary. Newcastle was demanding a big transfer fee. Now we're able to bring Zaha in on loan, and his salary probably will be about the same as what Almiron would have wanted, but maybe a little bit less. My thing is, I'm not so sure that we're not – whether money was the major motivation or not, I think we luck out, because Almiron – you look at two guys – Zaha is, I think, let me look this up briefly as I keep talking here. He's 30-something years old, right?
32.
He's 32. Almiron is 31, if I'm not mistaken. Almiron's 30. So I think he would be 31 when the season starts, if I saw at one point. So they're about the same age. If you're getting an older player, Almiron, what I'm trying to say is Miguel Almiron is a guy who's game, when he's at his best, his game is very dependent on speed, first step, beating a guy with his pace. That's how he shined in MLS. That's how he made his way to the Premier League, is always being the fastest guy on the pitch. That's not exactly what Zaha does. Zaha is a big physical guy who uses his body and clearly is athletic, but he's a little bit more of a skill player, a little bit, he's both stronger and more finesse, whereas Almiron is pure speed. So I actually think if you're getting a guy who's in his early 30s and sort of heading into that, rounding the curve towards the tail end of his prime, I think you're going to want the guy who's like Zaha, who's depending on touch, skill, and class, and physical presence more so than speed. So I think now Almiron is – there's talk that Almiron is going to come back and go back to Atlanta. Charlotte FC had discovery rights on him and had the right of sort of first chance to bring him back. Atlanta said, we want to talk to him. Charlotte granted that right. It's very likely that Almiron ends up coming back and rejoining Atlanta United, his first club. But I think we end up with the better end of that exchange, because I like what a 32-year-old Zaha can bring more so than a 31-year-old Almiron.
Hearing you say that, I agree 1,000%, and you're spot on. It's a really nice point. And I think there's a comp. There's a Wilfred Zaha comp out there for sure. A player that Charlotte FC fans are obsessed with talking about. A player that for the entire – ever since Dean Smith has been hired, people have had their pie in the sky transfer wish around Jack Grealish. Jack Grealish is the same type of player as Wilfred Zaha. They're the type of player and both of these players began this type of play at clubs that weren't in the top upper echelon on European football. And I want to be clear about this. Galatasaray is that. Galatasaray is a
Champions League club, yeah.
Massive, massive, massive club. And when Jack Grealish was at Aston Villa, what he did, Danny, what he was so good at was having the ball on a string. He played out wide on the left, and he could dribble. He could maintain possession. He would take fouls. When Aston Villa needed to have a little bit of possession and needed to start controlling the game, Jack Grealish is who they gave the ball to. And Wilfred Zaha can be this exact same player. I mean, he is, you talk about skill, and I think it's important to say this. I mean, you're talking about world-class dribbling and ball skill ability here, right?
Right.
To where if Zaha, and this is why I made the comment earlier about maybe playing the number 10 position, right? Is because, and combined with what you said, we already have a player like Miguel Almiron. We have that guy.
Abada.
Correct.
Yeah, he's 10 years younger. You know,
exactly. Yeah. So let's just continue to send Abada on those back post runs at top speed. And Wilfred's going to be on the ball waiting to find Abada on that back post, waiting to beat his man, waiting to slot the ball into Pat. This is what I'm talking about from a squad point of view. Now we've got into tactics, which is great. We're starting this tactical discussion about how Zaha fits into this club. It's really exciting to talk about. And from a business point of view, right, Danny? I think we have to address the elephant in the room, is that the club cut a lot of cash this offseason.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that was super interesting is that did you hear Dean Smith talk about how Pamadou Ka was not being replaced on the coaching staff?
No, I did not hear that. We did lose Pa. Pa's gone to go follow, you know, his dream of becoming a head coach.
In Phoenix, I believe, at the USL Championship level. Yep. And Dean Smith was like, we're not filling that role, which is interesting. And remember that the president of the club was also let go over this offseason. And as of now, he's yet to be replaced. So from a business point of view, you can see how the cost cutting, in my opinion, has immediately added up to signing a player like Wilfred Zaha.
Right. And that's behind the scenes. And then you think about letting Jalen Lindsay walk. Lindsay, love Jalen. He's one of our own, Charlotte kid that came up. Dean Smith talked about him as a guy who just needed a better opportunity that he wasn't going to get here playing behind Nathan Byrne. Jalen made a pretty decent chunk of change. If you looked at the MLS salary database at the end of last year, I'm not here to talk about other people's money, but Jalen was pulling in $300K a year to sit on the bench, you know, and that's I wish he made $3 million, you know, but at the same time, when you're spending in MLS, there's only so much money to go around with the salary rules. Yeri Yurinen, another guy who was making a pretty decent chunk of change to not be relied upon at the end of the year in crunch time. So Yeri got an opportunity where he could get back. It was funny to hear the contrast in the way Dean spoke about those two departures. He was like, Jalen, you know, I shook his hand. I wish him well, and I just want him to get a better opportunity. He's entering his prime, and he needs a chance to play. Dean Smith was like, yeah, you know, if a player doesn't want to be here, I don't want him here. So it was clear that as much as we love Yere and talk about how his positive attitude and you play with a smile on your lips and he was a good glue guy in the locker room, I'm sure he was. He left because he didn't want to be here because he had a problem with sitting on the bench, which I don't begrudge him that. But it was time for him to go back to Scandinavia, and he's caught on, you know, a Finnish player who's now caught on with a Swedish club. We wish him all the best. But let me
add some context to that. Let me add some context to that. Okay, Jalen Lindsay's not playing on any other team. Charlotte FC is Jalen Lindsay's team. He can make $300,000 and sit on the bench all year. It doesn't fucking matter. Yuri Yurinen needs time. He plays for the Finnish national team. Like, he needs to play, and so I just.
the reason why I'm jumping in there is I don't want to, and you said it right. Don't, I don't begrudge him for it, but those two situations could not be any different. When you play for your national team, it is the highest honor in global football. It just is. Mm-hmm. And you can't,
going back to what we said about Ajimong off the top of the episode.
That's right. And that's why I made sure to lead with that, because I think it's such an amazing accomplishment for Ajimong. And if you're going to play on the national team, you need the national team coach to see you play, that you need to prove to him or her that you're in top form. And Yuri Yurinen, at the end of the season, didn't have the ability to do that. And with World Cup 26 qualifying coming now, get him into Sweden, get him close to his home country of Finland, and make a push for being part of that World Cup qualification push. So for me specifically, I'm not going to begrudge him for that. And I think it's good. And I think it's so interesting to think about this team and how it has really changed in a way that I already said MLS Cup once on the show. I believe this squad can win MLS Cup.
Say it again. Say it again. Say it as many times as you want, brother.
I do think that this team could compete for the top three positions in the East after a fifth place finish in 2024. So I'll just lay my expectations there. Before we get into talking about Eric Williamson, Dan, I just wanted to put that out there. Like, what does this all mean? Mm-hmm. Why are we talking about all this? Why is it feel like it's a big moment for the club? Is because it feels like in year four, this club could go win something.
Well, think about it. We have a statement of intent with the Zaha signing. We have an emerging young superstar with Patrick Ajimong. We have Lael Abada, the DP, settled in to start the season after he came in midseason last year. And we also have, if you'll allow me, Dino at the wheel for the second season. You know, like Dino being back to sort of now with a year under his belt. And like last year at this time, we were all excited about Dean Smith and what he could potentially bring. Now we know what Dino brings, and now he's a known quantity. And Dino has gone through the whole calendar year and seen what the MLS schedule is like, what the MLS grind is like. He can make some adjustments to what he's going to do. And I just think, like, we can expect progression from Dino himself. I think Dean Smith will be better as a manager and as an in-game coach. He'll be able to run the squad better. I think these are all things that are coming together. We got Pep Biel as well. You mentioned him. Pep here for a full year. When he joined late, he was an impact player late in the campaign last year, and now he's here from the very start. That's a big deal. We've got Ashley Westwood, who has continued to deliver on the promise and his pedigree, and he's as bought in as ever, and he is an evangelist for Charlotte, you know, the biggest evangelist in Charlotte since Billy Graham, if you will. Westwood's out there just doing it, just singing the praises of what Charlotte FC and Charlotte as a city offer. And then you've got, like you said, Eric Williamson coming in, a guy who has had U.S. men's national looks himself in his career. He's a guy who since 2021, he's torn both ACLs, either side of it, in his right knee and his left knee. He's had major horrific injuries, and it's really tough to see, but he's back and he's rehabbed those. I like what Williamson brings as far as pushing Brant Bronico, as far as adding squad depth, as competition for places, as Dino likes to talk about. Deani's back. You know, Williamson, Westwood, Bronico, Deani, four guys for two spots. I think that's the best, you know, four guy for two spot competition that we've had since, you know, in the last year or so since Dean came in. I don't think that anybody, I think we had three guys for those two spots. Now we got four guys that can very realistically compete for those two spots and contend and be valuable in those two spots. I love where Charlotte FC is at. And I do agree with you that we came pretty close, you know, in finishing fifth last year. And then, as Dino mentioned in the press conference, you know, like the way the draw set up, if we had not had that hard luck loss against Orlando with a, you know, a BS penalty being called, that everybody knows is BS. Even the VAR told the ref to look at it, and the ref refused to look at it. The ref was like, I know what I saw, and just disregarded the instructions of VAR to go take another look at that BS penalty of Duncan McGuire clearly taking a dive. If we had won that game, we would have hosted Atlanta United in the next round, and then presumably would have hosted New York Red Bulls in the Eastern Conference Championship. Could you imagine? Like, that's how close we were to hosting the Eastern Conference Championship, which is in year three, which is better, way better than I thought we would have been capable of at the start of last year, this time last year.
One other coup for the club for sure is to be able to hold on to Adilson Milanda. Heading into this season, somebody we haven't mentioned, just with that center back pairing coming back, Milanda and Privet, for sure, getting those two guys in. I think ultimately we've talked about the midfield, we've talked about the front line, just thinking about the consistency there in that back line coming into this season there between center backs too, with Tim Ream now having a full preseason. It just feels like everything that we've wanted Charlotte FC to do is finally coming together, including it being only January 17th and feeling like a lot of the transfer business is basically done. That's the shot. That's the, from an incoming point of view, sure, there's, there might be some more signings, but it's January 17th. The season doesn't start for more than a month at this point. So there's plenty of time for these incomings to kick off the season strong, because they need to. Charlotte FC's schedule is pretty daunting to start the year at Seattle Sounders to kick things off, which is for me a really, really tough opening game. It's going to be a tough place to play. So even if Charlotte FC doesn't get a winning result in that match, they've got a chance to come back and all of a sudden you're playing Atlanta
right
at home to home kick opener. Off the regular season at home. And then
on a Sunday afternoon,
right. And then you're traveling to Miami and then you're hosting Cincinnati. I mean, the 4-game gauntlet to start the season, in my opinion, is why this team said, oh shit, we got to get our transfer business together quickly, because we've got to be ready to play for those opening four matches. And I think that's a Dean Smith initiative for sure. I think he's smart enough to know now that a stretch like that to start the season could really make or break your year based on how your team kicks off the year, because it's really tough to bounce back from a bad start.
Yeah, and the teams that you mentioned there are teams that are reinforcing as well. Cincinnati looking like they're probably going to lose Lucho Acosta, but they brought in this new guy, Denke, their new club record signing. There's talk that Evander might make the jump from Portland over to Cincinnati. We'll see if that happens. You know, Evander, one of the best midfielders in MLS last year, attacking creative midfielders. Atlanta bringing in Almiron, bringing in this a guy named Lathe, who I think is going to make his name in MLS. Atlanta is spending big money. Seattle always doing it. Seattle, just, you know, sort of a model MLS franchise, made a deep run in the playoffs last year after a slow start. It's a real big deal. And that's why it's so important, like you just said, John, to like have our business sorted. And what did Dean say at this time last year? He said, oh yeah, well, we've got Swiderski and Copetti. They're designated players, but they're not my designated players. And now, you know, who knows what exactly is going to happen with Carroll, but we've got Zaha and Abada. Those are two designated players that Dino has overseen the recruitment and the securing of. Again, we need Zaha to go official. It feels all but official. It did feel all but official with Calvin Stengs last year as well, but we need to figure out exactly what's going to happen with Carroll. Again, the word on the street from ZK is that I'd be surprised if he starts the season with us. We'll see if that, you know, surprise, surprise, surprises happen. So they're not impossible. But yeah, I totally agree with you in terms of having our business sorted earlier than ever. It's a really good position to be in. And I wanted to get into one question with you on that back line that you mentioned, John, because I know you love to talk tactics. Do you think we'll see the same tactical situation on the back line that we saw last year, where it is a 4-man back line, but in possession, it almost kind of reverts to Ream as sort of a hybrid fullback center back combo, where, you know, he's not going to be pushing up, like Byrne is going to be pushing up way further on the right than Ream does on the left, because as we advance into attack, Ream almost sort of shifts, and it almost shifts to a sort of a pseudo, it's not a fully 3-man back line, but it's 3-man back line ish in that situation of the ball.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's exactly how Charlotte FC is going to set up in the back line to start the year. And I think one thing to keep an eye on, as far as transfer business is concerned, if Charlotte FC was going to make one more move, it would be at the fullback position in my mind. knowing that Tim Ream, a player, probably can't go at left back game match after match after match. It actually might be nice to move Tim Ream inside. If Privet, it gives you a three-man rotation for the two center back positions.
Yeah,
with Privet, Milanda, and Ream. And if the chemistry is good, if clean sheets are happening, then sure, don't switch it out. But if there's an injury, if you need to give somebody a break, I would expect a fullback to come in and be able to be interchangeable with Tim Ream at that left back position.
Yeah,
there's any rumors out there?
There's that wild rumor. There's that wild rumor that we saw sprout up just the other day as the Zaha thing was kind of getting closer and closer to an official status. I saw the name Matt Target thrown out from a source over in England saying that Matt Target, he's a left back that's played for Newcastle, a very creative left back, a very offensive minded left back who has played with Dino before in the Villa days, like someone that Dean is very familiar with. He's kind of rehabbing from his own injury situation, just recently got back on the pitch with Newcastle, but he might be surplus to their requirements. So that's someone who, you know, in theory could come over and do really well in MLS as well. Haven't seen a ton of action on that one since the first report came out, but this is a guy that would definitely improve the depth of the squad and it definitely give us a different look in playing it out of the back and attacking from the left down the left wing. So yeah, Target's out there potentially. What do you think about, would you try this, John? This just popped into my head. Let's say we don't sign a left back. Let's say Ream needs a little bit of a rest. Let's say we've got Zaha on the left, Abada on the right, Pep and Pat in the middle, in the pockets, doing their thing. Would you put left back Kerwin Vargas?
No, absolutely not. No. I wouldn't even consider it. No, he's just not.
He's a defensive-minded winger.
Okay, here's you just said the key word. If you told me he was a wing back, I would say, interesting. I could maybe get on board with that. A wing back has a lot of running to do. Wing back goes end line to end line. So do fullbacks. Don't get me wrong, but fullbacks have more, especially in Dean Smith's system, have more of a defensive responsibility. If this was a wing back system, I think Kerwin Vargas could potentially become a wing back. But as a fullback, no, not in this situation. But in an emergency situation, sure, roll him out there.
Are we still protecting Kerwin Vargas at all costs?
Of course, yes, and that's why I think this Zaha transfer, the signing, gives Vargas a little bit of time to continue that development. Not as much pressure on him to be the star in 2025. We know that this guy has the ability, has the engine, wants to play the game, loves to play the game. But unfortunately, in 2024, he proved to be just maybe a little bit behind schedule. I still think that he's a tremendous prospect. And I think that just like Patrick Ajimong has been able to learn from a guy like Karol Szymierski, a very good finisher, just like Milanda and Privet now are able to learn from Tim Ream and Brant Bronico, from Ashley Westwood. And Kerwin Vargas finally has somebody to look up to and say, that's who I want to become on the squad. And hopefully Zaha and Vargas are able to communicate and that relationship is good. Because if I was Dean Smith, if I was in his shoes, I would try to get those two together and try to turn Kerwin Vargas into Wilfried Zaha. You're not going to do that, of course, but you're going to motivate him to understand that his game needs to reach a new level.
And don't forget, Kerwin's just barely older than Abada. He's just 23 years old himself. So
exactly,
he's got a lot of development left to do. I know Dean said something or Zoran said something recently when I was talking to him. He said, you know, when you're 23, you know, you pretty much are what you are. But I don't necessarily agree with that. I not to question his expertise and his acumen, but I do think that players have the ability to get better between ages of 23 and 27 for sure.
Well, I think in Europe, in the European transfer market, I think Zoran is right.
That is the context he was speaking of as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, and sure. I think that's right. I think because in Europe, it's really tough to be a late bloomer because of the way the academy system is, the way that European football is set up. MLS is trying to build that academy system. The Philadelphia Union, I think, is a good example of a team that has done it and done it well. and players are. If you are in the Philadelphia Union Academy, by the time you're 23, if you're a good player, yeah, you might be exactly who you are. But for a guy like Kerwin Vargas, who really didn't come up in a professional academy and has bounced around from continent to continent early in his career, there's still a lot of meat on that bone as far as development is concerned. And I think that's, in my opinion, that's probably more of a Western Hemisphere, North America soccer fact, if you will, that late bloomers happen compared to Europe, where there's just so many more scouting eyes on it. Mm-hmm. In the United States, especially because of college, right? You've got when you're young and you're coming up and you're playing ball, you either, if you're really, really good, you go to Europe and you get in one of those academies. If you're good, you then go to college. You take time and you get out of college. You're 21, you're 22, you're 23. And by the time you get to be 25, you've only been a professional for like 5 years. And right. you might peak when you're 28 or 29, because this league, its quality, its level just isn't as high as others.
Well, think about some of the names that this time last year, I think I've said the phrase "this time last year" like 12 times in this episode.
Well, this time last year, it definitely felt different than this.
Yeah. So like, if 100%, because you think of, these are some names that were like, we were like, we need these guys to show up this season in 2024. And now these are pure depth pieces. Yuri Tavares, Infasha Burkimus, Brandon Cambridge, Tiger Smalls, Idan Toklamati. Like, those are guys that like, in a slightly different world, we would be relying on them, and now they're sort of like pieces that we can just incorporate in the squad and continue to develop and hopefully get some contributions, but we're not reliant on those contributions from guys like that. Tavares, I think, is probably the best of the most, you know, match ready of any one of those. But Toklamani scored a bunch of goals with Crown Legacy when he came over. Nimfasha is still a young kid with a lot of development who's been playing U.S. national stuff. Tiger Smalls, you know, didn't really take advantage of some opportunities he got last year, but also still very young and very pacey guy that I think Dino likes. So there's a lot of like young talent that's now can develop at its own pace, and it's not necessarily like do or die. We must have these guys contribute or else.
It's a great point, and it's got to be a reflection of the manager. Like, Dean Smith actually has put this team together in a way that a real professional football club should.
Yeah, depth.
And when you think back at the first 3 years, the way Dean is finally been able to put his imprint on the club heading into year two, you can just kind of year two of his tenure, I mean, mm-hmm. but you can just kind of look back to the first 2 years of the club now and just kind of, you know, it's always hindsight is always 20/20. But I think it's important to look back and we've gained some serious perspective about this club's launch, how difficult it was. One thing wasn't difficult: the fans. The fans made this club happen, Danny. I mean, they just did.
Of course.
The supporters. I know David Tepper, you know, ponied up and bought the club and put it in his NFL stadium and took it away from Raleigh, which I'm still appreciative of. And I always will be appreciative of that, yeah. No doubt. But it was the fans that showed up that put Charlotte FC on the map, right? Because nobody in the first 2 years, 2.5 years of this club put Charlotte FC on the map. Nobody did except for the fans. And when you think about it, the club kind of knew that. Think about all the marketing material that the club used. It was always the fans. Mm-hmm. It was always the atmosphere. It was always the party. It was the drone shots. It was the sold-out stadium. What was happening in Charlotte was all about the supporters. And if Charlotte FC goes on to become a really successful franchise, it's because of the supporters and the way that the supporters lifted this club up. Some better than others, for sure. But specifically, the season ticket holders.
Yeah, season ticket members, baby. All, and not just in the supporter section, but all around Bank of America Stadium. You know, it's those season ticket members that show up week in and week out and make, you know, like, I sit in the supporter section. I got love for the supporter section. The supporter section does a very good job of sort of setting the tone for the atmosphere. But the supporter section can't do it by itself. And if we were just a supporter section, we would not be the true great club atmosphere. It's everybody in the stadium. It's you. You're sitting near midfield. It's Reverend Burrell, who's sitting directly opposite across the supporters. It's Level Up Luke, who's over there by the tunnel. It's, you know, like I got friends and fans all over the damn stadium. And it's a beautiful thing. I couldn't agree more, Johnny. And it gets me so hyped up and so psyched for the fact that training camp has opened. And we're just, you know, as we tape this, we're a day away from the club flying down to Miami to do 2 weeks of a spring camp in Florida. And then, you know, in about a month from now, February, as I'm looking at the schedule here, February 5th, the club comes back from Florida and travels out to Raleigh. This is a little bit of a miss, I got to say. I'm hyped up about this season. If I think there's a misstep in what's going on with Charlotte FC in the preseason, it's the fact that we're doing a preseason friendly in Raleigh against NCFC. There's no reason that should be happening versus a friendly here at Bank of America Stadium against Charlotte Independence. We all know why it's not happening. It's because David Tepper wants to just crowd out. He wants to crowd out Independence from being any type of success whatsoever, which is really unfortunate. That's something I agree with you that I'll always be grateful to Tepper for bringing Charlotte FC here. But I'll also point out where I think he's making strategic missteps. And the idea that for Charlotte FC to be a success that you have to get rid of the Independence in the same market, that's a huge mistake. That's a big wrong step by him because – just, you know, a quick side tangent. There's no world in which dollars that would be spent on Charlotte FC are actually only being spent on the Independents as well. Everyone who's a season ticket member of the Charlotte Independents is a big Charlotte FC fan also. There is room for both of those teams and clubs to coexist in this soccer city. We've always said it. And they should be playing every year in a Community Shield type preseason matchup. It's really unfortunate that Charlotte FC is going out to Raleigh for that friendly on February 5th. I will criticize that pretty harsh terms. At the same time, it's just one data point on a preseason that's got me very excited because the club's going out to Coachella again after that for the middle of February, doing a week out there, playing the Galaxy, you know, the defending MLS Cup champs, and then playing Portland, I think, right? I think is the second match in Coachella. You know, Eric Williamson versus his former club. And then February 22nd, you know, it's we get the damn thing started in Seattle. So we're a month away, Johnny, as you and I are sitting here recording this.
That's the beauty of MLS. I think I said it on one of the shows to end last year, is that the offseason's short, that we're going to be back at it again. We're going to be playing week-to-week games. We're going to be able to enjoy this club. We're going to enjoy I think MLS a little bit more this year. And the reason why is because the league has made a concerted effort to make sure all the games aren't on at the same times. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be easier to be an MLS fan in 2025 than it ever has been because they're starting to figure out the kinks with the Apple deal. And if I could just add one thing that you talked about as far as this Community Shield, this charity game that I think should happen between Charlotte FC and Charlotte Independence. I think when you see a friendly scheduled against NCFC, when you see a friendly scheduled against the Charleston Battery, you know, the kind of vibe that gives me is that someone at Tepper Sports and Entertainment needs to understand that this club is called Charlotte FC. This club is not called Carolina FC. It's just not. And MLS is a very different ticketing experience than NFL. In the NFL, sure, it's the biggest show in town, and you're going to have people from all over come to Charlotte to watch an NFL football game. That's just how it works. The NFL is king. The same cannot be said for MLS. The people that are going to show up day in and day out to Charlotte games are people that live within 2 hours. And I think when you start going past 2 hours, I get you're trying to drum up interest. I get you're trying to bring your club around the Carolinas because Yeah, the Carolina Panthers are part of the organization as well, but I think that a change in strategy there would be a little bit better for the people who are close to home, that are close to the stadium, that want to watch a friendly, because it's been done before. We've been in the fortress. We've been at Bank of America Stadium watching free matches in preseason. Why mm-hmm. we're not doing that again? Well,
it makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. I don't understand. And you're only making the soccer fandom as a whole stronger by letting independence grow and flourish under the wing of Charlotte FC. So
keep an eye out for any messaging around the Zaha signing about any supporter and season ticket holder events at the stadium or at the facility. I'd be interested to see. I think one thing about this club, Danny, that has separated itself under Joe LeBlanc's leadership is that connectivity with the supporters. Now that Joe LeBlanc is no longer part of this organization, yes, he is a consultant, and I would imagine Joe is consulting this team, saying, "Hey, we've got to connect here with the fan base here soon, because we haven't really done much so far in 2025. I think we need to look out for that here in the next couple of months."
Yeah, I'll even go to say, even if it's not about the independents, I love Charlotte Independents, a lot of great people. We've had a good time with them, but there should be some preseason free entry friendly in Bank of America Stadium, whether it's no matter who the opponent is, right? Like how are we asking Charlotte fans to go out to Raleigh for a preseason friendly? It makes no sense. We have a giant fucking stadium here in Uptown Charlotte.
Well, and if you want to take a page from your NFL compatriots, your colleagues in the building, what do the Panthers do for training camp?
They invite. I have no fucking clue. I don't care.
They invite fans. Fans are allowed to come to training camp. Fans are allowed to come watch practice, and that is not the case for Charlotte FC preseason. And sometimes I think you got to ask yourself why. Why isn't that an initiative? Why shouldn't fans be able to come watch practice in preseason just like they do in the NFL? I think it'd be great for not just the league. I think it would be great for the team specifically, because then that's how your fan base gets to know these guys, gets to feel mm-hmm. like they're connected with them when they see them outside of match days on training days.
It could be an intra-squad game. It could be, Charlotte FC A versus B. We got the depth that we just spent an hour talking about, Right. I don't understand why there's not more local preseason accessibility. Great point.
It's Charlotte Soccer Show. Danny, it's been a blast hanging out with you this morning, talking about this 2025 season. It's great to see you. I hope this is a good listen, a good watch for people over the weekend here as you're ramping up. To really get these games started, get down to Florida, like you said, and start playing some closed door matches and getting this team prepared for the 2025 kickoff. It's our plan to be back with you at least weekly during the 2025 season, for sure. We will be here covering this team. We took some time off this offseason. It's super fun to be back. This is officially our first kickoff show for 2025. So, I'm proud to say that the Charlotte Soccer Show experience will continue.
Yeah, and it feels like we literally just sat down to start recording, and then I look at the timer there, Johnny, and we've been talking for an hour. So that's just like it's really always fun to be on mic with you. Really appreciate everyone who gives good feedback or negative feedback about the listening experience and what it's like. And I am honored to be looked at as people want to hear what I have to say about Charlotte FC. I'm going to try to keep earning that every single day. And we do everything, we'll be bringing back interviews. We'll be bringing back guest appearances. Who knows exactly what form this show is going to take as the season progresses, but that's been kind of the beauty of it all along, is you never really know. You just enjoy the surprises.
He's Danny Brams. I'm John Hayes. It's Charlotte Soccer Show. And as always,
for the crown, baby.